Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. As always, please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, Natural Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. And that's VitalityCapsules.com. As always, I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. Well, today's topic is fake research. That's spelled P-H-A-K-E. Yes, absolutely. No doubt about it. It's fake. And this has penetrated the area of supplements to such a point that it's just jaw-dropping. It's amazing. And with supplements, there's so much good to say about them. There's so much they actually do. I mean, why bother with misrepresentation? Because if you just tell the truth. They're just so stunning and so outstanding. But this is what we're left with. I'd like to say a special hi to, I see William Witt and Yvonne and Miriam. And so thanks for tuning in. And so I came across this on the internet, and this is actually some advertisement. And it says, will you be a victim of this silent heart killer? I was already worried. Oh, my God. Could I possibly have it? I mean, after all, it is silent. And so I said, nearly 33% to 50% of people, of course, we don't know which people. There's no clue which people. And so we're wondering, okay, we've got the numerator, where's the denominator? So they don't know they have this disorder, whatever it is. Yet it's one of the major risk factors for heart disease and stroke. Oh, my God. Could it be dehydration? I don't know. Let's read more. You'll find plenty of people who will tell you how you need to treat it. Now, of course, my first question is, and yours should be too, well, does treatment prevent death? Because it is, as I say, a silent killer, right? So is treatment going to prevent death? And he says, but everyone's going to tell you how to treat it, but who do you know is right? Now you can find out for yourself in the blood pressure reduction guide. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. We know that treatment of blood pressure with pharmaceuticals is absolutely useless, not helpful at all. So to jump all the way to how to treat it, when you don't know, we haven't established if treatment is necessary, is an issue. And you're going to see a lot of this, either with supplement advertisements or with talks about research. And they'll say umpteen percent of people, we don't know which people, we don't know who they are, what they're like, if they're like us, you know, who. And they'll mention that something needs to be done. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, let's back up and establish if it needs to be done or not. And we gloss right over that and recommending, in this case, at least it's a free blood pressure reduction guide that they're trying to get you to go for. So that's just one sample. That's an easy one. So we're going to go to the next step. This one's a bit more challenging. This is Alzheimer's disease, and this is what researchers have told us about Alzheimer's disease and various supplements. In recent years, researchers studying natural compounds have offered new hope. Now, the word hope, this is a red flag. Hope means there is no proof. And hope, I think hope is a legitimate thing to have, but you purchase hope at the cosmetics counter, or you get hope from, religion maybe. But for researchers to offer hope, I think, is inappropriate. I mean, that's why they're doing research, so they can offer maybe evidence or something. But in this case, these researchers are offering hope. And so this means that they have no proof. So they go on to say, for example, two recent studies suggest, okay, again, we get suggest, no, it's a study, it's research. They either found something or they didn't. Maybe they found a little bit of the something, whatever they found, or maybe they found a lot of the something, but research is pretty straightforward, supposedly. So research suggests that compounds in cinnamon, as well as vitamins B12, B6, and folate, may delay. Now, may means might not. So maybe it delays it, then maybe it doesn't. So we're still nowhere. So we've got hope, and we've got maybe not. May delay the onset and or slow the progression of the disease, which would be, in this case, Alzheimer's. Well, as far as slowing the progression of Alzheimer's, that's pretty ambiguous because by the time you decide that you or a loved one has Alzheimer's, you're really desperate to reverse things. I mean, it's like, oh my God, can we turn this around? And so this researcher has found that somehow the progression is delayed and the onset is delayed. So if you're in a position where you actually have Alzheimer's or you know someone who actually has Alzheimer's, then whatever it is they're suggesting here is not going to help them. They're not going to get better. All they're going to do is get worse at a slower rate. It's like, duh, thank you for nothing. So this is very confusing, but when you sift through it very carefully, you see that delaying the onset means you don't have Alzheimer's, it'll take you longer to get it. Slowing the progression means you do have Alzheimer's and you ain't getting any better. So this is not good. So the promise of cinnamon and vitamins in the fight against Alzheimer's disease. Okay, a promise. I like that. The first study in question, published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, found that cinnamaldehyde, sounds a lot like formaldehyde to me, but whatever, and epicantigen, two compounds found in cinnamon, have an inhibitory effect on the aggregation of a particular protein called tau. Well, that's interesting. Now, tau plays a large role in the structure and function of neurons. That's nice, but is the role that tau plays in the structure and function of neurons important in Alzheimer's? We don't know, and they don't tell us. But while a normal part of cell structure, this protein, tau, can begin to accumulate. Well, it can begin to accumulate, but does it? So we don't know. And it can form neural fibrillary tangles. Wow, that's a big word. Basically, it's something that's seen under the microscope that are a hallmark of Alzheimer's disease. Now, it may be a hallmark. So once you have Alzheimer's, you're likely to have neurofibrillary tangles. But if you have neurofibrillary tangles, are you going to have Alzheimer's? We don't know. So we don't know which way this reasoning is going, and so we don't understand the importance of this tau, or if it is at all. So both compounds were found to protect tau from oxidative damage that can lead to dysfunction. Dysfunction of what? Dysfunction of cell structure or lead to Alzheimer's, which is it leading to? And even if it is leading to it, again, we're back to that word, can lead. So, well, basically, the adjunct professor at UCSB's Department of Molecular, Cellular, and Developmental Biology and co-author of the study explained the protective process to Medical News Today. All right, so what he has explained to us is really not a lot. What he is explaining to us is all of his research, however much they're paying him, is inconclusive. It hasn't concluded anything. And so if you have Alzheimer's, whatever it is he's found, you're not going to benefit from, because all it's going to do is slow the progression. And how do you know your progression is slowed? Because you certainly haven't gotten any better. How do you know how fast you would have gotten worse? You don't know. All right, so, by the way, I'm a definite fan of cinnamon. I eat cinnamon frequently. I even had cinnamon today. But this study does not do cinnamon any justice. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul Channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, Natural Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. And that's VitalityCapsules.com. As always, I welcome your calls and questions, so please call in at 914-338-0600. 1-800-795-9595. All right, this is a doozy. This is one. I get a lot of emails about this. I even get phone calls about this. So I'm going to address this right here, right now, today. This is something called sour sap. Now, when people started telling me all about sour sap, I had no idea what sour sap was. So I had to go look on the internet and find a picture of it. So once I found a picture, I was like, oh, I know what that is. That's guabana. Well, that grows just right down, actually, on the other side of the fence in my backyard is where it grows. And so you can imagine how shocked I was to find that sour sap can cure cancer. I'm like, whoa, that's news. I'm excited. So let's take a look at all the evidence we have here. So we have this article, and we talk about studies. One alternative treatment of cancer that has been used in the past, especially in countries where it grows well. Now, this is key, countries where it grows well. So materials always work better when used on people who live in the area where a particular herb or plant grows. And often it may be ineffective on people who do not live in that area. And so this is sour sap, a flowering evergreen tree native to tropical regions. And this fruit is said to kill cancer. Now, it's said to. That means it's a rumor. So we're not talking about evidence here. Said to kill cancer cells more effectively than chemotherapy drugs and does not produce the same undesirable side effects, but may not be fully clear of any adverse effects. Wait a minute. Maybe it has side effects of its own. Whoa, red flag. Okay, so we go on. The active ingredient in the sour sap is an isolate. Or active ingredient. So look for an isolate. And when you have an isolate, you have toxicity and ineffectiveness. So, okay, they're looking for an active ingredient. That's a bad sign, very bad sign. It suggests it's a pharmaceutical company at the bottom of it, for sure. In sour sap that is proving to be effective is called Annona muricata or Graviola. There you go. Currently, it exists on the market under the brand name of Triamazon, but licensing of the product is not generally accepted in all countries due to the potential profit loss for pharmaceutical companies. Well, here we are. They're appealing to your conspiracy theorists out there instead of giving us just some evidence of what's going on here. I mean, we're ready for good news. Everyone likes good news. Give us the good news. So I said, Graviola is not just a cancer treatment. It has also displayed anti-parasitic, antimicrobial, anti-inflammatory, anti-humoretic, and cytotoxic properties, according to Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. In some cases, Graviola has also been used as a painkiller, and the results were positive. This is, again, another red flag. What is positive? This could mean that one person in 10 felt a little less pain. We don't know. But this kind of talk is very, very, very shady. It means that if something was found, it's minimal, and it probably can't be reproduced. And so then the study, they go on to say, as it relates directly to cancer, test tube and animal research demonstrates that Graviola may be, in other words, maybe not, an anti-cancer agent. However, no human clinical trials have been performed as of yet. In other words, there's no evidence of human benefit. So you haven't even tried it on people, and you're telling us that it works? I don't know. According to the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, Graviola extract proved to be effective against liver cancer and breast cancer cells. That means in a laboratory dish, not in a person. So this is not looking good for Graviola. Now, there's a naturopath named Leslie Taylor, that's good, author of a book, Healing Power of Rainforest Herbs, and she notes, so now we have hearsay twice removed. So he heard Leslie Taylor, who heard that studies show Graviola has an inhibitory effect on enzyme processes in some cancer cell membranes. All right, so we still haven't got it into a person. We're now into the cell membrane and an enzyme. So Graviola only affected cancer cell membranes and not those of healthy cells. Well, that's a relief. This research may, again, may means may and may not, lend support, support's pretty weak endorsement, to the herb's traditional use against cancer. So this is so far not very exciting. Or, it's tough to get behind Graviola with this level of research that they have. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, Natural Remedies so powerful, they could make antibiotics obsolete. That is vitalitycapsules.com. As always, I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. Now, we have some more about graviola, more information. So research, first, I'm going to go through these studies and really the parts that you can't quite rely on and what you can draw from them. And then I'm going to talk about what you really can do to make some progress with picking out supplements. So research done over 20 laboratory tests by one of America's largest drug manufacturers. Oh, there's our red flag. Bell should be going off now. Suggests means there's no evidence that the extracts, again, extracts means not the whole plant. This is a partial thing here. We're able to demonstrate the following. So we got the drug companies. So first we start off by saying, oh, this thing can't possibly come to light because it would harm drug companies. And now we've got the drug companies doing the research for us. Okay. They effectively target and kill malignant cells in 12 types of cancer. That's nice. Including breast, prostate, lung, and pancreatic cancer. That's nice. The tree compounds proved to be up to 10,000 times stronger in slowing the growth of cancer cells than adriamycin, a commonly used chemotherapeutic agent derived from, by the way, a mutated strain of bacteria. Now, this is a clincher. This is where you guys say, you know what? I'm really not happy. Because the benchmark drug, adriamycin, they've chosen to compare this natural ingredient to, is a cancer drug that is nicknamed Red Death. Okay. So cancer drug nicknamed Red Death, you got it. It kills people. And everyone knows it kills people. And this is why adriamycin, supposedly, is reserved for cancer cases when people have a cancer that has a pretty high death rate because adriamycin is going to add to the death rate. So does this mean it kills only one person for every 10,000 people that adriamycin kills? What does that mean when we say that a natural substance is 10,000 times stronger than adriamycin when it comes to killing cancer? Because we know adriamycin just kills the person. So it's more, they say, unlike chemotherapy, the compound extracted from graviola tree selectively hunts down and kills only cancer cells, does not harm healthy cells. And to that, I have to say, yeah, right. My problem here is there's no proof. The comparison is made with a chemo drug that is known to kill patients. This is not encouraging. Not endorsing the herb, but endorses an extract. We know with experience with cannabis, or THC, which is the active ingredient believed to be in marijuana, our experience is that extracts put into a pill do not have the power of the herb, never do. And also, again, this one has no human studies, so don't go out and buy graviola. It's not time to do that. Now, our next study we're going to look at is calcium. Now, calcium is a very important supplement to understand. So this is going to take a while, a little in and out, kind of around the tree, so to speak. I'm going to explain to you the different pieces of the research and kind of what they mean. It's important to understand because you're going to come up against this a lot now that more people are using supplements. And what's actually happening in the supplement industry is the pharmaceutical industry is actually buying out the supplement industry. And so calcium is an excellent example of this. I first became aware of calcium back in 1987. Yes, I'm that old. So I was practicing medicine, and there was talk that women, of course, were at risk for osteoporosis, and they all should be put on hormone replacement therapy, and calcium. At the same time, I became pregnant. I was pregnant. And so I thought, well, geez, should I be taking calcium? And I ended up taking calcium, and my children survived it. So I was there in the thick of it. Now, as much as I wanted to believe that calcium was helpful, all the research suggested that calcium was absolutely useless, totally useless. Calcium supplements were useless in terms of osteoporosis. You can imagine how disappointed I was because I was a doctor. I was giving lots of drugs, and I always looked forward to another drug that I could prescribe that might be helpful. So I was disappointed that calcium could not be added to my list. I would say it was an ever-growing list, but it was not, because I was disappointed that drugs were not working. So my list of drugs that I would use is getting ever shorter because I was noticing that they were not working. That was back in 87. So we're going to talk about calcium. Many of you are old enough, like me, to have followed the calcium debate. You need supplements for calcium. You don't need calcium supplements. They're dangerous. They're helpful. So it helps to know that calcium supplements are, in general, made by pharmaceutical companies. And their own research, that means the research of pharmaceutical companies, has failed to show benefit for at least the last 25 years in the area of improving osteoporosis. So the role of calcium supplements as it pertains to osteoporosis is very well settled. Calcium supplements just are not useful. They don't help. So now we have Canadian researchers who are on the case. And the headline is, Canadian researchers have found benefit. It's also helpful for you to know that calcium comes, in general, in 1,000 milligram tablets. So you need to know that as you read this little piece of research here. So studies find calcium is good for women, despite past reports that it increased risk of a stroke. And we all have CTV news staff weighing here and covering this incredible breakthrough. So the benefits of calcium supplements, they do concede, have been the subject of hot debate in recent years, with some studies suggesting the pills long recommended to prevent osteoporosis might actually be dangerous to the heart. Now, a new study is pushing the pendulum once again in favor of the pills. All right, so now we're pushing pendulums. So now we're moving in favor of calcium supplements. And this study is to be published in the Endocrine Society's Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. And Canadian researchers have found a link between taking calcium supplements and a longer lifespan. Okay, there may be a link, but the link might not be the calcium supplement. So let's read further and figure this out. While the study was observational, the researchers say that they noticed a link between the calcium and lower risk of death. Well, that's interesting. Now, the study was based on data from a large-scale Canadian multicenter osteoporosis study, which monitored the health of 9,000 Canadians between 1995 and 2007, and 1,160 participants died. All right, fair enough. So the data showed women who said, that means we don't know that this really happened, but they said they took daily calcium supplements, appeared, means it looked like, might be an illusion, but it looked like they had a lower risk of death during the study. So interesting, the researchers could not find any such link in men. So whether a man took a supplement or not didn't increase his life expectancy. Now that's a big red flag. If you were playing football, man, you'd throw down a penalty flag right now, because if women taking supplements live longer, but men taking supplements did not live longer, that's pretty straightforward. There's this a cultural issue here. Women seem to buy supplements and do all these healthy things, whatever, and a lot of times they can get their spouse maybe to take a pill, in this case a calcium pill, but really not really do anything else. So all he's doing is taking a calcium pill, and that's all. But the lady is doing calcium and maybe 20 other vitamins, who knows. So study's lead author, the director of Calcium Research Laboratory at McGill University in Montreal. You need to know McGill is a very, very prestigious university, heavily funded by private interest. So if the benefit seen for women who took doses up to 1,000 milligrams of calcium supplements a day. Now, up to means less than, not equal to, less than. So women who took less than 1,000 milligrams of calcium supplements a day seem to live longer. This is important because the U.S. government recommends 1,000 milligrams of calcium or more every day. So the study is very clear that if you want to live longer, you got to take less than 1,000. And, of course, it didn't matter if you took it with or without vitamin D. And so he added the link between calcium and longer lifespan in women held regardless of the source of calcium. So whether the calcium was from dairy foods, non-dairy foods, or supplements, these ladies live longer. This is interesting because if you remember from last week's show, the binders, excipients, colorings, all have side effects. And so these parts of the pill can actually have more impact on a person's health than the actual pill itself. And so the fact that these women could take any calcium supplement they wanted to, any brand, any kind, even from dairy sources, and still experience longevity suggests very strongly that the calcium was not what was going on here. The study, by the way, was paid for by the dairy industry and various drug companies. We'll read them off at the end. Those taking more than 1,000 milligram a day saw no added benefit. In other words, women who took more than 1,000 milligrams a day of calcium had a shorter life expectancy than those who took less than 1,000 milligrams a day of calcium. This is a matter of concern. So if you're taking calcium supplements, man, you know, you don't want to touch that 1,000 milligram a day mark. So more is not better and may even be harmful. Think about it. If those who took less than 1,000 lived longer, then those who took more than 1,000 had shorter lives. Now, their analysis showed that the total calcium intake among women was more likely to be beneficial than harmful. In other words, sometimes it was harmful. And the same is true, they felt, of calcium sources, like non-dairy sources or supplements. And so the latest study flies in the face of other research over the last few years that has questioned the benefits of calcium. Actually, no, it doesn't. This study agrees with those studies. This study says, and like other studies have said, you can't take 1,000 milligrams a day of calcium. It's not healthy. And the recommended doses of calcium that the government's recommending of 1,000 milligrams or more a day, actually, in this study, yield a shorter life expectancy. So it's very consistent with past studies showing that the outcome is worse with doses of calcium supplementation, especially since calcium comes in a 1,000 milligram tablet. Now, we might recently have come up with more 500 milligram tablets, but standard tablet is the 1,000 milligram horse pill. Okay. So 2 years ago, a major study in the British Medical Journal found that women taking 1,000 milligrams of calcium and 400 IUs of vitamin D per day were at increased risk of cardiovascular events, especially heart attack, stroke, and heart disease. Okay. A study showing that there is increased risk. And so they're saying that if you take 1,000 milligrams a day, you're going to have an increased risk of some pretty nasty stuff here. And so why take a supplement just to have no harm? So you're going to take calcium, and you're going to keep the dose under 1,000 so that you don't have harm. Well, why take it at all? So researchers in that study suggested that calcium supplements could cause sudden spikes in blood levels of calcium, leading to heart attacks and other events. We call that harm. And as well, they said that high blood calcium levels over the longer term were linked to calcification or hardening of the arteries. We call that more harms. And so the British Medical Journal study suggested, didn't have proof, but suggested that calcium from food, on the other hand, would probably not cause the same problems. So they basically took a guess, a stab in the dark. Now, they concluded that the heart risk, though it's a harm, posed by calcium supplements might, not sure, but they might outweigh benefits they offer in reducing bone fractures. Well, we know from studies historically that calcium doesn't offer benefits in reducing bone fractures. So then the harm created in terms of heart disease is not balanced by any known benefits. So if you go over 1,000 milligrams of calcium, you're definitely on thin ice here. Amid those studies, Health Canada is currently conducting an ongoing review of the benefits and risks of calcium supplements. Okay, good for them. And the authors of this latest study say their research suggests that moderate intake of calcium is safe. No, it doesn't suggest that. It suggests that calcium intake should be kept below 1,000 milligrams. That's what they said. And so they're saying they feel their evidence suggests that intake of calcium in moderate doses is safe and it's beneficial for bone health. Well, wait a minute. There was no mention of bone health. No evidence presented at all. And so the study leader says, this is the message we hope women would take from this. And the study, of course, was supported by Canadian Institutes of Health Research, the Dairy Farmers of Canada, Amgen, a drug company, Merck, a drug company, Novartis, a drug company, and Eli Lilly, another drug company. So what's wrong with this picture? Well, the U.S. RDA, just by the way, for calcium, is 1,200 to 1,500 milligrams a day, unless you are a male under in the age of 65, in which case it's 1,000 milligrams a day. So this study does not establish that anything more than 1,000 is helpful. The study also goes back and forth. Calcium's helpful, it isn't, back and forth. This is a mind control technique that wears your mind out with inconsistent information and gets you so friggin' confused. You throw your hands up, decide you can't figure it out, and you'll accept any conclusion they shove at you, which is the conclusion at the end, which, of course, is not supported by their evidence, and their conclusion being that calcium's a good thing and take it moderately, whatever moderately is. So the next thing is they mentioned that calcium is required for bone strength. Well, is this true? Well, if calcium was required for bone strength, then we would find that people who eat more calcium should have stronger bones, right? Well, men have stronger bones than women, and we know that they take in less calcium. So calcium must not be required for bone strength. So if calcium really does make stronger bones, you know, we would expect the higher intake of calcium to correlate with stronger bones, but it doesn't. So people who have stronger bones do not consume more calcium. Therefore, the premise is false that calcium is required for bone strength, or I should say supplemental calcium. So next, last episode we talked about excipients and binders. And that's everything in the pill except the active ingredient. In this case, everything except the calcium. So excipients, coloring, and binders alone could account for more benefit or harm than the calcium itself. So without making sure the same excipients, binders, and colorings were consumed by everyone in the study, there is no way to draw any conclusion about the role of calcium. And the study funders, of course, Amgen, Merck, Eli Lilly, and the Dairy Council know this. So the results of the study may have nothing to do with, again, the calcium, but everything to do with the binders. And so what other supplements were the women taking at the time? No mention. What was their diet and activity? No mention. Women who take supplements tend to exercise more, eat more nutritious food, and take other associated supplements and do a lot of other things that might be associated with longer life. None of these things in the study were mentioned. So this study tells us nothing and suggests there's no reason to revise the prior conclusion that calcium supplementation is simply not beneficial. Now, these are examples of research that can send you in circles. I mean, circles, spending thousands on supplements and not knowing if you're helping yourself or not. So what's a person to do? Well, first ask yourself, do you have the condition that they're talking about? If not, stop. Stop right there. Don't even read any further. No need to get a headache or something that probably doesn't even apply to you. But we have to identify our station here. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, Natural Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. That is VitalityCapsules.com. As always, I welcome your calls and questions, so call in at 914-338-0695. So with research like this, it's tough to make a whole lot of conclusions. So what's a person to do? So the answer is, as I said, ask yourself, do you have the condition you're talking about? If not, stop. Don't go any further. Just don't even bother yourself with it. Next, if you do have the condition that's mentioned in the article, read the article to determine if anyone died while taking the supplements in question. Then, if you're still interested, make a list of every symptom you have, every symptom, whether it's related to your concern or not. And then buy a version of the supplement that has as few additives as possible and try it out for 3 weeks. Any and all supplements will produce an improvement in something during that period of time if they're going to work at all. So if you take a supplement for 3 weeks and you don't notice any improvement, then you can just delete that supplement and try a different supplement. Or you have an issue, but that supplement's not addressing the issue. And Vitality Capsules, which you can find at VitalityCapsules.com, work very nicely in a week or less. Now, they're designed to remove waste from your system, specifically colon, small intestine, and biliary tract. So they're definitely worth a try. At the end of your trial period, whatever supplement you decide to try, carefully review your list and see if anything improved. If not, then stop, like I said, stop taking the supplement because you have your answer. But you absolutely cannot rely on this new class of research. it seems to have been written by various marketing departments and lawyers, or combinations too. And so unfortunately, a lot of the information is not very reliable or very beneficial. But the good news is that supplements are sufficiently harmless that the risk is very small. So unlike regular medicines, where I guess the word is questionable research, can lead to death, torture, and mutilation, it's not the same with supplements. So the good news with supplements is, even though a lot of the research is questionable because it's directed by the marketing department, it's very safe to give them a try or give them a trial. And it's important to do that. You don't want to start taking something and then you're just taking it for 5 years. Can't remember why you first started taking it. So you want to take it for about 3 weeks is good. And if you notice an improvement, if you notice you can cross off a few of the things on your list in terms of symptoms or annoying issues, then definitely continue it. If you take a supplement and at the end of, say, 3 weeks or so, it doesn't seem to have had an impact, then definitely, you know, put that one back on the shelf. I think that's the way to go. To go back to school and get a PhD in how to read BS, it's probably not reasonable. And many people spend endless times researching supplements. And there is, research is helpful, but nothing beats results. And so you really have to be results oriented, because if you're not, then you can easily be led off track, and that's not good. So that's all I have to say about this particular topic, but I do have some news to report. I've written a book, yes I have, and the title of the book is The Lethal Dose, Why Your Doctor is Prescribing It. And so what I'm doing is transcribing the radio shows, adding more information to them, and publishing them as Kindle books. So the first Kindle book is going to be out in about 2 weeks, which is very, 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 very exciting. So next week I'll definitely give you an update on how that's going. If you have any questions, click your question bar, the question thing, and I'd be happy to answer any questions today. So I'd like to say, research is very, very dubious and I guess you could say misleading. Research has become the new propaganda. And this is something to really be aware of, that research nowadays is so biased that it's simply unreliable. There's one individual who actually two scientists. They're working for Amgen, and woman's working for Amgen, which is a drug company, and another woman's just a scientist. Two of them got together, and they attempted to reproduce the research results of, I believe it was about 53 studies, and they were only able to reproduce the results in 6 studies. That meant that the remaining 47 studies, were either falsified or the data was faked, or that all of the information collected was not used or was not counted. And so these things happen routinely in research. And so basing any important life decision on research is a pretty sketchy thing to do. And a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm going to base my decision on research. I'm going to base it on science. And unfortunately, the level of integrity required of scientists in terms of the requirement to produce all of your data, for example, or count all of your data points, there is no such requirement. When the person does a study, they can decide, okay, everything over 10 doesn't get counted. Everything under 5, we're going to leave out. And then, of course, they come up with a study saying that everything in the world is between 5 and 10. And to the public, who is not aware of the research techniques, like, oh, my God, well, that's very interesting. I didn't know everything in the world was between 5 and 10. Oh, my God, I'm glad I read this research study. I never would have thought of that myself. So a lot of times these things happen. They're accepted as complete information when actually they're not. So what can you base your decisions on? Definitely your own personal experience. That's a biggie. And if not that, then the experience of relatives and friends. Because you can always talk to them and say, hey, you know, when you took this supplement, were you taking something else too? Were you doing this? Were you doing that? What kind of food were you eating? And all kinds of details you can get from them that you're not going to get from a researcher writing a study. And when I was in medical school, I would often ask, well, geez, they've done this study, and they found that so many women got this and got that, and this happened and that happened. I said, well, did they check to see if any of the women were taking another drug in addition? They checked to see, and I had a whole list of did they checks. And when I asked these questions, they said, Dr. Daniels, studies are expensive enough as it is, and we can't keep track of all that stuff. So we're just going to keep track of one thing. That's what was being counted, and this is the study results, and this is the way we're interpreting it. And, of course, as an obedient medical student, I would say, I see. And so a lot of studies are extremely, extremely biased, meaning biased in terms of what they decide to measure, biased in terms of how they decide to measure it, biased in terms of what they decide not to measure. A lot of times that's as important or more important than what they do decide to measure. And so what we have now going on is all of these practices are working their way or have worked their way into the area of supplementation. And so we have these studies a lot of times piggybacking onto the falsehoods in the medical industry. And so you have a study based on a falsehood, and so the results, you know, can't possibly be useful. One interesting area of research is hot right now is prostate cancer. Well, prostate cancer, the more you look at it, the more you investigate it, the more you find that people who have prostate cancer live longer than those who don't have prostate cancer. And so when you talk about curing prostate cancer, once you know that people who have prostate cancer live longer than people who don't, then, of course, the question is, well, who wants that cure? Well, what is curing them involved? You have to murder a few of them? How does this work? And so a lot of natural research into natural products is based on the assumed validity of propaganda. And propaganda, if you read the definition, is, of course, something that's false. So it's very challenging from a point of view of natural things to base one's decisions on research. I would personally recommend not doing that. I'd recommend basing it on the experience of others or your observations or your experiences, and that will give you definitely the best outcome, the best results, and the least amount of disappointment. But this research field has become very, very compromised. So if people have questions, they can click the little question button. I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, we're going to end the show. Let me see if I can find my music. Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for listening. And next week we'll have an update on how the book is coming, how the publication is coming. And our topic for next week is not determined, but you will be getting an email. Okay, well, thank you very much for listening.